It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Excuse me. We have Cowboys coaching coordinators approaching the podium. We'll hear from Matt Eberflus. We'll hear from Clayton Adams here coming up before too long as our training camp coverage continues here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Brought to you by the on-time experts, Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. And we got Sam Haggerty coming up 3:20. Rangers utility guy, incredible speed, 6'7" big league veteran. Had the stolen base Saturday night that set up the tying RBI from Heim, and then they ultimately beat the Braves in extra innings. So Haggerty is going to join us here coming up at 3:20. And at 4:20, we're going to have Stephen Jones, the Cowboys COO. Stephen A. Smith ripping Stephen Jones. I wonder if that'll come up in conversation. I got a little bit uncomfortable at times, actually. But so much going on with this football team here on an off day. Krusty's Corner's coming up at 3:40. Right now, the injuries are the biggest concern. And you had Kalen Carson yesterday along with Tyler Guyton, both going to be in the 4 to 6 weeks category. That one's tough. The George Pickens interview yesterday was outstanding, though. And the part that the national media picked up on to talk about George Pickens was that he basically said the Cowboys are synonymous with the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And so the national debate shows obviously had a good laugh about that one. But I thought George Pickens absolutely crushed it. Maybe, you know, he has a higher opinion of the Cowboys than people paying attention to the present would. But George Pickens, a football historian, right? And I do think somehow magically, I guess this is the brilliance of Jerry Jones and his marketing ability, the Cowboys are synonymous with the Super Bowl still.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first thing that people think of, either the fact that they haven't won it or that they are going to win it or when are we going to go get another one. But somehow, despite 30 decades passing, I mean, I guess one way to look at it is 30 years is actually not that long. But I think I do agree. Now, I would not agree with George Pickens that right now it appears this team is that capable of winning, which is another interesting thing the national media is doing. They're kind of fanning those flames of believing that this Cowboys team is close. But I think they need a great building year this year and then address their shortcomings next year for this team to really get close. Like, I know we have a lot of running backs that are making plays, but I think that's because this run defense is one of the worst in the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. I think you could put a lot of guys back there this week and be like, wow, you know, this guy might actually have something, because whether it's Jay Toya or Solomon Thomas or Mozzie Smith, you don't have a real run-stopping defensive tackle. So, that's where I would look at what George Pickens had to say yesterday. I just hope the man's still around in 2026, 2027. And I think that's maybe the biggest question mark about what this team is going to look like next year. Is George Pickens going to play so well that it mandates that this team, you know, keep him long term? And if so, who's going to have to be gone? You know, it'd probably be a defensive player, because this team isn't going to reorganize the way they look at the salary cap to make room for extra players just because they're good. They'll just say goodbye.
You just got Cortland Sutton yesterday, 23 APY, and what I had heard from Pittsburgh, part of the reason they wanted to move on was George was asking for 25-plus a year, and Pittsburgh knew, we're not going to be paying you that, so let's go ahead and get something for you now instead of just letting you go ahead and walk in free agency. So I would assume that's kind of the starting point of what he's going to be asking for, but I loved the interview yesterday, and I get it. Like, the Cowboys, the way that they've lost in the postseason, we all know. We've lived through it, and it's heartbreaking. But there's two teams in the entire NFL that have more Super Bowl wins than them, and that's the Steelers and the Patriots, who have 6. Then it's the Cowboys and the Niners with 5. So they are. I mean, they still are the pedigree, one of the absolute biggest brands in all of sports, and a big part of that is because of the success that they had in the 70s and then the dynasty of the 90s. And George Pickens, I loved everything he said yesterday about that, and I've loved Shoddy not shying away from that history and embracing, hey, everybody that's got a Super Bowl, like, I want that to go ahead and just rub off on all the entire team, because that is the expectation, and it should be. To hide away from that, I never really agreed with. The standard is Super Bowls, and if you're not on board with that, get the hell out of here.
Who would you like to take between George Pickens and, say, T. Higgins?
I would say George Pickens, honestly. I mean, one, the health factor. I mean, that's huge. And Ja'Marr Chase is clearly wide receiver one in Cincinnati.
So I was trying to think of how would you structure it if you have one of the highest paid wide receivers. Where would the second receiver fall? And his is right at $28 million, I believe, for George for
Higgins.
For I think Devontae Smith's also right around there.
So, see, that's what I'm saying. How do you look at it as, you know, do you look at it as you're not having to pay a runner? You know, likely you might. You know, how do you justify next year? You know, making sure that you have that kind of contract. You've got. You know, you've got some, I mean, like I say, you have to think about Tyler Smith. I'm just thinking about offensive players that you have to pay. I was under the impression that they're not going to be able to get it done with this guy, and they still might not, but I'm trying to now find ways to make it comparable to what maybe some other teams are doing to be able to see if you can make it work. And I think Cincinnati might be a place that I start.
Yeah, I think trying to make it work would involve getting multiples of these guys to take a deal for $5 million less. If you can get five guys, like Ose has done it, maybe Jake Ferguson took a little bit of a discount. Could you get a discount on Tyler Smith? Right now, you're starting to come up with a way maybe you could allocate the extra money. I think George Pickens and T. Higgins is an interesting conversation. I would say Cincinnati's offense was a lot more advanced in the passing game. T. Higgins was playing with inferior quarterbacks. So I think, or Pickens was. So if you put Pickens in Higgins' situation, you know, I think he would have made a Pro Bowl. I think he would have been much more consistent than what Higgins was able to do. You know, but I mean, if it's $25 million right now, I think you go offer him 3 and 75.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you got to make this work. The league has the Cowboys offense in checkmate with this clog and cover stuff. Like, hey, Dak is accurate. The completion percentage says pretty accurate, but his ball placement, his anticipation, it's not elite enough to throw between levels when seven guys are back. We've seen that. So will Pickens fix that? I hope so, but I don't know. You know, I think that's the risk for the Cowboys. But I would say, dang it, fortune favors the bold. You know, two wide receivers who are elite is not something this team has ever done, I think, in the 30 years. Like, right around the time CeeDee Lamb's fixing to get paid, Amari Cooper's got to go. We're not keeping multiple guys. But I think the league and your circumstances, demand you take another look at that.
Maybe he wasn't elite at the time, but Terry Glenn and T.O., right?
That was unreal, yeah. Terry Glenn, I don't think, was viewed as, like, that type of... like top 15. Yes, those two were a really, really good duo.
And what was the price? You know, I think we'd love to have that talent, but what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you going to do, you know, to sort of make that happen? And I think this George Pickens thing could help, you know, redefine what Dak Prescott is capable of. If it doesn't work, I think you got to go back to saying maybe one great wide receiver, a second guy that we draft on day two or day three, or spend $10 million in free agency. Mm-hmm. We got to come here at running back. We got to figure out a way to take pressure off Dak with a runner, not extra receivers.
Might need to look at the quarterback if that case. If he can't make it work with Lamb, Pickens, Ferguson, you know, that kind of thing. That would be a very telling. Mm-hmm. Telling thing for him.
Luka Doncic at the Yankees game last night. He was asked about the Mavs. I think we have the audio. We'll get to that maybe a little bit later on. I think the biggest thing about this story is the Mavs asked him to get in shape multiple times, and he would come back in worse shape. You know, so, like, what's your reaction to Luka being in amazing shape right now? I think some people are so dug in anti-Nico. They're like, see, you traded Luka, and now he's in great shape. You're an idiot. I'm like, actually, I think Nico's looking smarter as this thing is going on. And, oh, by the way, Luka's getting ready for Eurobasket. Isn't that the real reason he's getting in shape like this? Every summer he does this, and then during the NBA season, he's traveling around, I guess, living a life of luxury and consumption. And somehow managing to get in significantly worse shape as the season goes on. So I think this is a to be continued right here. But I look at that more as an indictment and justification for Nico's decision to trade him. And I don't think Luka would ever get to that level without the disappointment of being traded and then having J.J. Redick call him out like he did.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to have Luka on the cover of Men's Health magazine right now if he's still with the Mavericks. That's not happening. And I do think there's the Slovenian team has plenty to do with it, but also just the entire narrative around Luka with the trade was so much about him not being in good physical condition. And so it's like this was sort of the rock bottom on that. If he didn't do it this offseason, then you almost feel like he was never going to do it. And maybe at some point down the line, a little bit more maturation, a couple more years of not winning the title, maybe a flip would switch with the Mavericks. But there's no way right now he's on the cover of Men's Health magazine looking the way he does if he's still with the Mavericks. So I'm 100% in agreement with you. But we've also seen him get into decent summer shape, as you mentioned, and then find a way to, within 2 weeks, look like a totally different person in the season. It's like he's defying – I don't know. It's like how impossible is that to be playing basketball, playing like 40 minutes a night, 3-4 times a week – and put on weight.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of traveling businessmen deal with, where you're out on the road.
Scouts and stuff. It was
you're sitting in hotels, you know, and shoot, I guess your metabolism's not burning.
I think his genetics allow him that they're kind of something that's probably a problem for him. You know, I mean, not that his mom, dad are fattering, but I mean, maybe it's
his dad is large.
Yeah, but it's something to do with, you know, that his that's the way he's made up. And sometimes, like, I watch you eat. Like, I watched you eat last night. And just and then, like, Ruben left 2 big potato skins on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at me and go, did he just leave those?
Yeah. And then Eric finished his burrito, too. And I mean, what is he doing?
Eric just picked it up. But you're like trim and slim and all that. And the rest of us are, like, eating poke bowls and pushing the rice aside because even if we look at it, we're blowing up. But you're like looking at Choppy's fish and chips, thinking like, well, how can I get a bite of that fish?
Those were passing the eye test, man. Yeah. He said he didn't like them, but they look damn good.
See, that's what I'm saying. Or you just, you know, you take 2 Whataburgers, deconstruct one to make it 1 big Whataburger. You know, 4 patty meal, and I'm just, and you don't put on any weight. The rest of us are fighting for, you know, the rest of us are Luka.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, that's really what it is.
That's how I feel.
You know, the weight goes back on so hard. I mean, I worked for 1.5 years to drop 80 pounds.
Yeah.
And then you immediately go back into, hey, I'm not as dialed in, and the weight just piles right back on. Everybody is built differently, the way that they and also, I wonder if it does have something to do with, like, the American food. You know, when you're the preservatives and all the crap we're putting in our food that people talk about, like, maybe there is something to that. I don't know. I'm not like a health nutritionist guy, obviously. So that's, you know, something that that's beyond me. But there could be some truth to that. The food that he's having overseas versus when he comes back, and maybe he is just dialed into some of the fast food life.
Is he a big beer drinker? Do you think he's a 6 to 8 beer every other day guy? Something like that?
I can't put really a number on it, but yes, he's definitely a beer guy.
Yeah.
Which can help.
That's going to hurt.
Pack on the pounds or whatever. But
you're right. He's playing 40 minutes a night. How's he not, like...
You should be burning so many calories.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of
and
guys...
Being a young guy, too.
There's a lot of guys that can eat that American diet and be fine. You know, but I mean, I think if you would look into nutritionists and stuff, they would say everybody's body reacts to different things.
And sugar content.
It's hard to, like, go to dinner with him because he's eating, like, a wheelbarrow full of food, and you're over there, like, literally, like, you're worried about the salt on the damn crackers you're eating, you know? I mean, crazy.
But here's why I think this is going to be...
I'm serious. Hey. I hate going to dinner with him. I do. I stood behind him when he ordered, and I'm, like, thinking, he's going to order half the right side of that menu, and it's not going to bother him one bit. And I'm over there thinking, like, oh, look, 2 pieces of lettuce and a little tomato. Oh, let's see if we have that. And next, you know, heck, you know, and I'm watching him eat. And I'm going,
you're gonna eat that?
Yeah.
The Reaper's coming for him, though.
I'm just telling you, my man.
Reaper's coming.
My man.
Hey, here's what you do. Here's how you combat it. Okay, you mix in 1 24-hour fast a week. One day, your body's not getting any calories. Now, all of a sudden,
you've been doing that?
Now you make up for
See,
it.
That's dialed.
That changes things a little bit. And then, hey, man, mix in a little Iron Paradise.
What's that?
That's
the weight room.
That's the weight room.
Oh, Iron Paradise.
So okay. That's what it's going to get done.
1986. That's what,
you could still get in there, bro. I can see it on you right now. In the gym, your arms look totally different. Those delts start to pop out a little bit. The crawfish shoulder starts to feel a little bit more.
I'm not going
to
go in there because I'll tell you what, I'm going to get mad at somebody putting their camera on the side and like doing some type of, you know, with
you need a home gym. The other bands off.
And I'm like,
the seared cod quesadilla last night. Okay.
Sounds amazing.
Really.
You've been really
impressive.
About this.
Like I'm thinking about circling back. Shout
this
out
is
to
Spencer
Duke's
McKenzie.
This was Duke's beach
My
bar
man
and grill
sat
or whatever.
There literally for like 8 minutes looking at the menu and talking to the lady about it. You know, kind of like trying to plan out how he was going to put it all together.
Yeah.
And he was taking stuff from the side menu to the front menu to the
That was a hack. They don't actually do the cod quesadilla.
Yeah, he was
moving
around.
But when I said
it,
she was like, I guess we could do that. Yeah. I'm like, all right, let's dial it up.
Is that something you've been doing at the house for the girls, making little fish stick quesadillas? Or what's
no,
going on there?
No, I just
That just popped in your head?
That just popped in my head. Yeah, I'm going, wow. Why not?
Can you throw some cod in there?
That sounds disgusting.
Really?
It does. It does, man.
Dude, it was good, bro. Well, I'm serious.
Well, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 Through the Fan. I don't know if we're going to get the coordinators up here on the podium here in this segment. And we do have Sam Haggerty on the other side. So we need to step aside and make way for the Rangers player show and see what old Sam has going on. What he's thinking of this baseball team. Winners of 7-9 here on your home of the Rangers. Pregame tonight at 8:30. And we're back with Rangers utility man, speedster, Sam Haggerty here in the Nation. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Cowboys defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus is addressing reporters. We'll go there in a second. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first. 214-817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas, the Frankels. Sam Haggerty's been moved to 520, I guess, being on the West Coast to just push the sked a little bit. No sweat. Stephen Jones is coming up in an hour. Here's a Coach Eberflus.
Yeah, great question. I would say that it's changed over the years. I think when you're young, and I started coaching when I was super young, I had just turned 23 years old at the University of Toledo. So my idea of what I was doing there was more ambition, you know, than gratitude, if that makes sense. You know, so now I'm grateful for the journey that I've been on. And excited to have the opportunity to have that journey, to be able to learn, to be able to grow, not only in football, which is my vocation, but in my faith, in my family, and that's what I stand on, and then my vocation, which happens to be football, and really to pursue excellence every single day. And I tell the players this all the time, you're pursuing excellence every day in those three facets. Your faith, your family, and your vocation. We're sitting here in a football meeting, so we're doing football. I said, but that is not a soft statement. You know, to be excellent, to be elite, to master your craft, okay, in all three of those areas, that's a job now. So those guys are doing that, and that's really what I try to do every day and learn and grow in those three areas, and so that I can help others do the same. And that, to me, is really what motivates me every day. And it's a day-to-day process, moment-to-moment process. But it's more gratitude, you know, over ambition as I was when I was younger.
Joe Hoyt, Dallas Morning News. Cowboys had 8 corners to start games last year. You kind of talked about the evaluation process with some of these other guys. A couple guys they had to add last year as they went on. Is it easier to evaluate potential depth pieces and guys you may need to
Well, that's part of the process. We got those guys in there now that are playing, and I think that it's going to be good. You know, it's going to be good. You always have to understand, and if you know, players are in or players are out, because that's part of football, right? You're going to lose guys during the course of the year, and you're never going to be at 100%. You have to learn how to move your scheme to fit the skill set that you have. And I understand at some points you got to cover people, right? And that's you know, it's like a quarterback. At some point you got to throw in the pocket. It's the same thing for a corner. At some point you're going to have to cover. But we're just evaluating that right now as we go, and it's a good thing. And again, there's a lot of talent on this team, and I'm excited about working with those guys. But again, you can't ask a guy to do something that he's not able to do. You got to ask him what he's good at. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love his energy. You know, I've been fortunate and grateful to be around a bunch of good linebackers, and his energy is right up there with the rest of those guys that are really good players. So he's got a great future ahead of him, and he's really going to be exciting to grow and exciting to watch as he does grow. Yeah, Osa's been great. You know, I love his work ethic. I love the way he brings guys together. He's been working with the young guys, the young D tackles that we have with Tommy and Jay. Really doing a good job with Mozzie. You know, those, and then having Sally in there has been wonderful as well. So you have two really good veterans in Osa and Sally in there. I think they're really affecting the entire group, not only the D tackles, but it's really good to have Tay back, another good veteran. And that's a really strong room for us, you know, in terms of a veteran presence and mentorship, you know, mentor those guys that are underneath them, the younger guys. So it's really been good. And we really encourage that for our veteran players to really mentor those guys, take those guys under their wings at every position. Just practice. You got to just keep practicing it. You know, it's got to be on your mind, and you got to practice it every day. And it's not, this is not something that we're looking for at the end at all. It's something that we look for daily. So we know what we do repeatedly. That's who we are. So we constantly do that every single day. And some days are better than others, and we're going to keep it on the guy's mind. We're going to keep emphasizing it, keep drilling it. You know, I believe that the coaches, the position coaches, are the backbone of the football team. And I believe that those guys, their drill work has to be game-like, has to be set up the right way. And if we keep drilling, whatever it might be, and we'll be good at it. And I truly believe that. You know, and so the guys just keep working at it over and over again. We spend a good portion of our individual drills, if you watch, during that. If we have a 20-minute individual, we'll spend 5 minutes doing takeaways. So It's just drill work and technique.
Bill Jones, CBS, Texas. Tell us about Jack Sanborn and how big has it been for him?
Yep, good question, Bill. Good to see you. Jack is a really good pro, you know, and he's been with us for a few years now. And man, if you talk about the consummate pro, you know, showing up early, staying late, knowing his stuff, perfecting his technique, being in elite condition. He's been a joy to work with. And Jack makes plays. You know, he's a playmaker. And he had an opportunity to start for us a few times at the last stop we were at. And it's been really good to watch him grow. And I'm more excited about this year for him than anything because he's changed his body. He's done a really good job of adjusting his body, his movement skills, and his efficiency of movement, as I said earlier, have really improved. He's really getting closer and closer to the ball, and he's making a lot of plays in practice.
All right, there he is, Cowboys defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus with you here. Tennis courts in Oxnard, California, training camp 2025, talking about Jack Sanborn in there. I know a lot of Cowboys fans hopeful that he can build off the work that he put in Chicago. I thought the interesting highlights there, it's going to take everybody to be a good run defense. That's kind of building on what you've been saying in this offseason, Brian. It's not just about the DT.
Yeah, I think to me that we focus so much as a fan base on run defense, on having a big, sloppy defensive tackle that plays the run. And what's going to happen is if you really study this team and the problems they had last year, yeah, inside play, not great. Outside play, not great. You know, they just could not control the point of attack. There were times where the ball was beyond the line of scrimmage before contact was even made. That just tells you all you need to know, whether it was inside, outside. But it's really going to be on this front seven to try and control the run the best they can. But it's going to have to be about these safeties stepping up, making plays, but also these corners. You can't have corners. You want to play good run defense, you got to have corners, believe it or not, that when the ball spills, you have to be able to step up and keep maybe that it's a 3-4 yard gain and not allow it to be a 10 or 12 yard gain. And that's what they're going to need. They're going to need buy-in from all 11 on that field, but it's just not about those defensive tackles.
I think that might be one of the reasons Kyrie Elam is here.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that can be physical against the run. I mean, this is a guy who plays both pass and run as a cornerback, so it's going to take 2 or 3 years if you really want to turn this over, right? You can't just snap your fingers in one off season without, you know, spending your entire draft in free agency.
They're going to have to do something that the very early Mike Zimmer teams did when Bill Parcells was here, and that's when they were undersized up front, but we had a group that had linebackers that tackled well. When you talk about Dak Nguyen, Dexter Coakley, you had Leroy Glover that played with extreme quickness as that nose tackle or that inside technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to have to be they're going to have to play with the players. There's nothing magically that's going to happen different. He's going to have to scheme different. He's going to have to think about, though, okay, how do I keep my guys on the move? Because if they have to play toe-to-toe with somebody, that's going to be a problem. They've got to play on the move. And I think Matt understands that right now. You mentioned 2 or 3 years from now, but there's no big-time players walking through that door that's going to save this run defense right now. Just not going
to
happen.
He also said when it comes to pressure, we believe in sending everybody at some point. Mm-hmm. I guess to me, one of the strengths of the defense and the team is the edge. Do you have to be that exotic, or can you line these guys up?
He can wind them up, and he did it the other day. They got down in the red zone, and the Cowboys offensively, whether it was Dak or Joe Milton, they were forced into, matter of fact, Dak threw an interception down the middle of the field, and it would have been a sack from Ezeraku, but they brought an all-out blitz, and Ezeraku came untouched. So he's going to do things. We've seen slot blitzes. I know we were talking about in two live mics yesterday, or three live mics, that all of a sudden that, you know, he's going to have to bring. And that's kind of a Rod Marinelli thing. If you remember Rondae Barber, you remember when Orlando Scandrick got the start here. Orlando Scandrick playing slot, being a blitzer. Those are things that defense has built into it.
Okay, Krusty's Corner is right around the corner. Steven Jones coming up at 4:20. I do believe Clayton Adams is going to be talking. We should get some offensive coordinator chatter as well. Are you hearing anything about a veteran corner here with Carson now joining Diggs and Revel?
Uh-uh.
I mean, you're light. It's Gilmore time, isn't it?
I put in the call today on Love of the Star that I would not be surprised if, bold prediction, I think Stephon Gilmore is going to get signed here. Maybe they wait until they get back to Frisco. I mean, they could just slow play this thing. Maybe they have good information on Revel that he's going to be back sooner rather than later. But they are light on bodies right now. And if these injuries end up being, you know, longer than they expect, I think absolutely Stephon Gilmore to me just makes a lot of sense.
The video that came Sunday of Revel going up and getting that pick and then coming down, was he limping? Does he not trust it? Like, there is either got to be a pain breakthrough or a confidence breakthrough.
Didn't look good. That part of it did not look good.
And there's other stuff that does?
Well, there's other stuff that they've had that's been, I think that there's been better, but that one right there, when he came down, and that was Tommy Yarish posted that, and then Tommy Yarish even came back, and I bet you somebody from the organization told him he had to make a kind of a retractment. But that was troubling to see when the way he came down. That was not where they needed to be with that right now.
I mean, based on that, it seems like we're well into the season, you know?
I don't know about that, but I just know right now it's not good.
All righty. It's the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Our injury reports brought to you by Greystone Roofing. They've got you covered when the hits keep coming. Broadus has you covered coming up next in Krusty's Corner. What's in store, buddy?
Yeah, through a first week of practice, let me tell you the guys I've really liked to watch practice. We'll do that next.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a good one. Time for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king of the Krusty's, Brian.
Thank you very much, General. Appreciate that. Thank you very much to Reliant for my nifty hat I got on today, too. I wore the Reliant hat. I'm just really happy to have that on today, and thank you for always hanging out with me here in Krusty's Corner. We did hear from Matt Eberflus. We're about to hear from Clayton Adams. We're probably not going to go to him while this is going on, but I know Todd Archer is going to ask this question because he and I have already talked about it. He's going to ask how they're going to play this thing at left tackle. And if you guys had an opportunity, you know, as you look at this, and I know we're a couple of days in, but we've talked about this a bunch. How do you think they should handle the left tackle spot while our guy's out right now? Guyton's out.
Yeah, I'd be giving Awesome Richards the first look at this. I liked what Awesome was able to do in the games that he played last year. It's unfortunate that he had an ankle injury. But now, I mean, I don't know how in practice, if he's been outplayed by a guy like Nate Thomas. No identity's been working that right side.
Sure. But
to me, I've been an Awesome Richards fan, and I'd like to see him to get the first crack at it. And, hey, I mean, maybe he doesn't win it, but at least give him the opportunity.
Yeah, we're open for business. I want to try a bunch of different things, but, you know, I think my question back to you, Brian, would be, do any of those players have the potential that in 6 weeks when Guyton is ready to come back, they could make an interesting conversation out of it?
See, I was kind of thinking that Awesome Richards, and this is to answer your question if I can, I was hopeful that Awesome Richards was going to compete with Guyton. And that was going to be there was
yeah, I remember you saying that.
They were going to let that be a battle, mm-hmm. And you know, and now, and I don't know, and maybe Clayton Adams is going to tell us this, but right now it doesn't seem like they're interested in a swing tackle situation. That at least through camp, they kind of feel like, and this goes back to where the conversations that Zach, that when you and I were working the draft, and Clayton Adams was saying, well, hey, if we can't pin and pull, we're not going to do it,
right?
So maybe they don't think that they have guys that can play left and right. Now, if they move Adeniji to play right to left, now this is, I'm trying to get your question here, Dawson. I was hopeful that it was going to be that all of a sudden it was going to be a little bit more of a competition and Awesome Richards, and because I didn't realize that Guyton was going to make the kind of jump, and it's unfortunate for him, he's missing days. Because you could see him, it's just completely night and day. And I know I've said that a bunch, but like, even if Awesome Richards was over there competing against him, I think Guyton would be taking this. I think it would be. I don't think it would be. Awesome Richards has been okay. And Thomas, I think at times, has been not totally comfortable. Guy has played guard in college, mm-hmm. They kick him out to tackle. He's probably more of a right tackle than he is a left tackle. But I wonder if the situation with Adeniji and how he was able to, if they put Adeniji in there at left tackle ahead of those other guys that are working right now, then that means they don't have any real confidence in. Now, Awesome Richards has been playing as the extra tight end or the big extra offensive lineman, you know, when they go heavy personnel and they want to bring, you know, Awesome Richards' jumbo packages. Awesome Richards has been the jumbo guy.
And has that been both sides? Like, that could be on the left or the right?
He has been, I tell you, it's one time they traded the formation. Like, he's on the, him and Hunter Lipke are standing on the left side, and all of a sudden Dak comes to the line, starts the cadence. They trade it where they went over to the right side. So here's this big tackle, you know, coming over with the fullback over to that side. And they did it a couple of different times. So it's not like they're just saying, okay, we're just going to run this from one side.
Yeah.
We're going to try and do it from both sides here.
I love that,
dude. But if Adeniji has done a solid job. I was thinking there was going to be like a big drop off. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh, geez, here's Steele, he's out of the mix, and now it's Adeniji, and we're going to get a turnstile over there. There was really no drop-off. So to answer your question, Adeniji was closer to how Steele was playing than maybe on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So but if they move Adeniji, that I think that tells you kind of what they think about Awesome Richards and Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you would have one of the younger guys get those reps and get that opportunity to develop a little bit.
Yeah, but we'll keep an eye on Twitter. I know I hear Coach talking. I hear Coach Adams behind. Okay, I've been here now over a week, and I've seen six practices, and I just kind of wanted to talk about some guys. And I know that we've there's guys that we've talked about a bunch when I was with you guys when you were back home and now here. I've talked about Donovan Ezeraku a lot and watching him practice. I talked to you guys about Miles Sanders, and I feel right now, at least through six practices, that I've been wrong about him. That he looks like a difference player, but that on a positive thing. I've talked a little bit about Elam and what I think what he's been able to show. Two interceptions in six practices, his ability one time to fool Dak Prescott, it hasn't mattered. I know some people on Twitter ask me, they go, hey, Broadus, is he just going up against Flannoy and you know, guys like that? You know, is he Jalen Brooks? Is he guarding Jalen? Is it Tolbert? Is he just wearing those guys out? No, he's playing against the Pickens and against the Lambs and stuff like that. So that part of it, I think, has been pretty positive. But a couple of the guys I want to mention, too, I think I've really been impressed with Maris Leofau in these practices. And I say this because Maris has been a guy when they've gone, and Matt has played a lot more base in these practices than I think that he has before.
And part of that's probably because the way the offense is going with a little bit heavier. They got heavier the tight personnel. Ends and
that's a good point. And he's worried about, hey, they're going to try and run the ball on me in this practice, and so I've got to kind of load up. But I think the thing with Maris Leofau that I've been super impressed with him, it's not just the creating of turnovers. It's his ability just to go and be where the ball is.
Yeah.
He's got this awareness about him that when the ball snapped, he's going that way. He's not a guy that, you know, Damone Clark was a guy that I talked about that looked like, you know, everything was happening real.
Lack of instincts versus lack a player of instincts, with instincts.
Yeah. But Maris Leofau, if you start to talk about how the linebackers, and this is not even with Murray practicing out here, Murray and Bland and those guys, they've been away with, you know, their new children right now. So it's been a lot of like Clark, Maris Leofau, those kinds of guys. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at with that.
That's exciting with Leofau and Clark. Yeah. But Clayton Adams did answer it with, yeah, we create as much competition as we can, was okay. The one sentence quote that Todd Archer posted on Twitter.
Okay, so we'll see if, in fact,
sounds like maybe a rotation there.
Maybe we'll see. Okay, thank you for answering that question. But if they move him over, I think that tells you a little bit about what's going on with what they think about
Richards and Thomas.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And now that Davis is hurt, do you feel better about the backup guards or the backup left the tackles? Is there any path to moving Tyler Smith that you're sensing?
No, I don't, because I am on the I believe when you watch this team run the football, it starts with the inside three. I am not doing anything to separate that right now.
Especially with Guyton having the return in like 6 weeks or so. You don't want to throw everything for a loop. If it was the out for the season thing, I think that's definitely a bigger conversation.
I had the conversation that I would consider if I had to go get a guy, I'd go talk to Tyron Smith.
Yeah, call Tyron.
I love that. Yeah, that would be fun.
I thought about that as a possibility. I know the Jets hold his rights.
Yeah, I did a 2-year deal.
Maybe you could flop things and try and get it back. But I would, if I had to go get a left tackle right now that I knew that Guyton was gone for the rest of the year, I'd consider calling Tyron Smith. But I also want to Maris Leofau, Solomon Thomas, I think, is showing up on a lot of things that I've been noticing. I know the defensive tackles, his ability to get up the field to attack, I think, has been really, really special in a lot of ways. He's beaten some really good. The guard combination, we talked about the center. He's been really good with those things. Peyton Turner, I think, is a much better pass rusher than I wanted to give him credit for. There's been some times out here where he's been on the edge and he's shown a little bit of some versatility as far as being able to avoid. I thought maybe he was just an upfield guy, get blocked. They've played him at some nickel stuff. Mm-hmm. He swung by Booker one time. Booker was too aggressive, went right by him for a pressure. He's playing a lot better than I kind of thought he would. I thought he'd be just a left-end player. I mentioned Perrion Winfrey earlier. I think he's playing really well at a very high level. But the guy that might be the best so far this whole thing is Kevontae Turpin.
Yeah.
Every practice, there is something that they're doing with him that gives you this feel that, like, wow, they've got a legitimate plan. It's not like, oh, let's just practice him at running back a couple of plays and then not do anything. Every practice, they've come up with something that he has excelled at. And you know what he's starting to do, guys? He's starting to catch the ball down the field.
Yeah, we saw that
he's
yesterday.
He's starting to be a guy that can be reliable getting the ball down the field. He can adjust. He's not the biggest. He's not the tallest. He doesn't have the ideal length. But even with some contested stuff, this guy's found ways to make plays down the field. Those are the guys that are really catching my eye through at least a week of this practice.
Love it. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement every day at 340 here in the G-Bag Nation. The OC Clayton Adams is talking. We'll give you more highlights of what he has to say. And what else do we have, Will Chuck?
Hey, Cowboys aren't the only ones dealing with injuries in the NFL right now. And how do they compare with the rest of the league in terms of talent under 25? That's next.